Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Tampa, Florida, and earned a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Florida, and was a three-time All-American golfer. He became a PGA golf professional and won 10 tournaments throughout his career. Since 1990, he's been a sportscaster with ESPN and now NBC Sports, and is best known for his
better than most
call in the third round of the 2001 Players' Championship on a famous fringe putt for birdie on the 17th hole's Island Green. His name, Gary Koch. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Gary Koch, who since 1990 has been a sportscaster with ESPN and NBC Sports on their golf coverage. Gary, welcome, a real honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack. It's my pleasure to be a part of the show.
Can you start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Well, I was an only child. It was a second marriage for my father, so he was a little bit older. And my mother was actually born in London, England, and came over to the United States right after World War II. My mom and dad met in South Carolina, were married a few years after meeting, and then I came along. I was actually born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in 1952. So nice childhood. We moved to Florida when I was about 8 years old, 1960. Moved to Sarasota first, and then later on, about 7 or 8 years after that, moved to Tampa, and I've been in Tampa ever since. Golf first came into my life when we moved to Sarasota, Florida. 1960, I was between my third and fourth grade years in elementary school, and of course moving to a new city in the summer. I really didn't know anybody, so my mother took me to the city recreation department on a Wednesday afternoon, and it just so happened they were having a golf clinic. And I just seemed to take to it right away. Loved the game, loved every aspect of it, and very, very fortunate. My dad had played some in his younger years, but had a bad back, and after I took an interest in it, he would take me out on the weekends to play. And then in my later childhood years, as I started playing a lot of junior golf, my mom would be the one to take me around to tournaments all around the state of Florida. And you know, without them, I certainly never would have accomplished, you know, what I was able to accomplish in the game of golf.
You had, Gary Koch, some early success. You won the Florida Open in 1969 as an amateur at age 16.
I did, yeah. You know, I progressed very quickly. I started, like say, when I was about 8 years old. By the time I was probably 13 or 14 in that range, you know, I was winning my age group in the state junior event. I think I actually in the PGA Junior my 14th year. In my 14th year, I think I shot a 68 in competition. I was not a very big youngster, and I had a phenomenal short game, and I was an unbelievable putter. I mean, if you put me on the green, I thought I could make it, and a lot of the times I did. So I think the 68 I shot when I was 14 in competition, I had 22 putts and 18 holes. Wow. So that was kind of how I learned to play the game, was by you know, not being able to reach greens in regulation, so I had to be very good around the green and on the green. You know, by the time I won that Florida Open at 16, I had played a fairly good amount of competitive golf. I'd played in the Florida State Amateur a couple of times. I'd tried to qualify for the U.S. Amateur and hadn't made it yet. You know, like I say, I'd won my age division in the Florida State Juniors, and you know, we just got to a golf course in Lehigh Acres, Florida, south of Tampa, down around the Fort Myers area, and it was not an overly long golf course. And I started making putts, and I'll still never forget the comment. I beat an older gentleman by the name of Pete Cooper, who had been a longtime pro in Florida and had actually played some on the PGA Tour in the 40s and early 50s. And I can remember walking off the final green, the 72nd green, and him saying to me, "Son, you better never forget how to putt." And I've kind of remembered that my whole life. So very fortunate, nice accomplishment at a very early age.
I played earlier today, Gary, and my opponent told me, "Jack, you better learn to putt someday." Then you go to University of Florida. You're a four-time first-team All-SEC Conference selection and a three-time All-American. And your teammates were Woody Blackburn, a guy named Andy Bean, a man named Andy North, and Phil Hancock. You win the 73 NCAA championship. Talk about that experience.
Well, playing team golf was really a lot of fun. You know, even in your younger years, my junior years before I went off to school, you know, you played high school golf, and that was, you know, it was fine. It was fun. I was on some very good high school teams down here in the Tampa area. We won the state high school event a couple of times. But when I got to college and played in a college program and on a college team, it was a very unique experience. Having a full-time coach and somebody to, you know, kind of guide you along the way, I was very fortunate. The gentleman's name at the University of Florida at that time was Buster Bishop, who really wasn't much of a golfer per se. He was more of an educator. He had been a high school football coach. He could play golf, and he could play it reasonably well. But he was just a great motivator, a great judge of character, and you know, really helped mold young men. It was very important for him that we did well in school. That was paramount. He told all of us that we might be fortunate enough to play professional golf after college, but the school was giving us an opportunity to get an education, and he was going to do his darndest to make sure that we took advantage of that opportunity. And I'm happy to say that virtually, well, certainly all of the gentlemen you mentioned that I was on the teams with through the years graduated with degrees from the University of Florida. And he was a real father figure, a great, great man, and as I say, a great motivator. We had some wonderful teams. We had a lot of competition amongst ourselves, which was great. It pushed us all to get better. And in the 4 years that I played there at Florida, we were third, first, and second in the NCAA championship. So we were contenders every year, and it was a lot of fun. I still keep in contact with all of the guys that I played with some 40 years ago. Some a little more than others, but we have some great memories.
We're talking to Gary Cook. When we come back, we'll ask him about turning pro in 1975. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Gary Cook, the legendary NBC golf analyst. Gary, you turned pro in 1975. Take us back to your first pro tournament, if you will.
Well, ironically, Jack, my first professional event as a pro was the 1975 British Open at Carnoustie. A little background. I had been named to and played on the Walker Cup team, the 10 amateurs that represent the United States against Great Britain and Ireland. In May of 1975, we played at St. Andrews, the old course, and fortunately we were victorious. I decided at that point I'd already graduated from college and actually had stayed amateur for another 6 months or so for a chance to play in another Masters as an amateur. I got to do that twice and then play on a second Walker Cup team there in 1975. So I was ready to turn professional right after that, and I did. So my first real professional experience was over in Great Britain and Ireland and also in Europe. I went back and qualified for that British Open Championship there in 1975. Missed the cut. Wasn't overly successful in my first start as a professional, but then stayed and played in Europe for another 6 or 7 weeks on the, what was, you know, the European Tour. It was certainly nothing of the magnitude that it is now, but it was a great experience. We played in Switzerland and Germany and Holland and the Scandinavian countries, and it was a good learning experience for me before I came back and went to the qualifying school here in Florida in the fall of 1975.
You played from 75 to 2002 on the PGA Tour, and then from 2005 through currently, you've played three events this year on the Champions Tour. What in all those years stand out the most for you?
You know, that's a good question. I guess, Jack, probably the satisfaction that you feel when you play to the level of which you think you're capable of. And, you know, it's just a great sense of rewarding yourself for all the effort, the hard work that you've put in, the time that you've spent to try to, you know, be the best you can be at your craft. And it also, I think, gives you a sense of, you know, making what you do okay. You know, traveling, playing professional golf is, you know, I think sometimes we do a little disservice, we being the media, when we show a tournament and we show, you know, the top guys playing and they win or finish high in a tournament and they make a lot of money and it looks easy. And when the best players in the world are playing well, it is easy for them. But, you know, we don't show the guys who are missing the cut, the struggles, the you know, times that guys are away from their families, especially when you start to have small children and children start school and, you know, you're on the road and they're at home. And so I think when you do have some success, it all kind of ties together that, you know, the support you've had from your family and friends and, you know, the satisfaction that you get from you know, performing as in a way that you think you're capable of is probably the greatest thing that I would take away from all those years of playing. Now, you know, we're in a sport where that doesn't happen that often. I mean, you don't succeed, you know, by if you use winning as the term to define success, then obviously, you know, it's a sport where you don't win that often. Now, Tiger Woods had a remarkable winning percentage, but for most players, you know, if you happen to win, you know, one a year or anywhere close to that for your career, you've had a remarkable career. So it's a very interesting endeavor. It's an interesting way to make a living. Play well, and it's a great way to do it.
Speaking of a way to make a living, we all know you as a golf analyst today. How did you ever get into that arena?
Well, Jack, that was one of those things of just happening to be in the right place at the right time. It was 1990, and we were doing a fundraiser for the University of Florida Golf Program in Orlando, Florida, at Lake Nona Country Club, and Bob Murphy, who had played at the University of Florida before me, had started working at ESPN. ESPN had just started covering golf. They were doing virtually all the senior events at the time. And he asked me, would you ever have any interest in trying to do television? And at the time, Jim Colbert was also working with ESPN, and he was getting ready to turn 50, and he had told them that he was going to go play on the then senior tour. And I had gone through a stretch, Jack, of, you know, probably a year, year and a half of not playing particularly well. It was a time when my children were young, and they were at home with my wife, and I was on the road by myself a lot, not playing particularly well, and, you know, I just kind of thought maybe there is more to life than what I'm doing, and maybe trying something different would be good. So I let him know that I would be interested. Went about 5 or 6 weeks before I heard anything from the producer of the golf at ESPN. He gave me a schedule of when they had some openings to try somebody. I agreed to do it. I guess they felt like I had some potential, and by the next year I was working full-time, 1991, full-time for ESPN. So just one of those, being in the right place at the right time.
Talk to us about the technology used to telecast a PGA event in 1990 versus what you have today.
Well, Jack, it's, you know, like a lot of things, it's improved dramatically. I mean, obviously the cameras themselves, the HD cameras, are so much better. The quality of the picture is so much better. I think golf coverage has evolved. You know, there's more cameras now. There's more types of cameras. Certainly, in the last few years, we've seen the use of Pro Tracer technology. The graphics are better. They're easier to read. Just on and on and on. It's a very difficult sport to televise when you think about it. Most sports, in fact, virtually every sport, there's one ball and one field. If you're going to cover a football game, you train the cameras on the ball and who's got the ball and where the ball is going. Baseball field, same thing. Basketball court, same thing. But in golf, anytime we do a telecast, I mean, you literally have potentially 18 fields, all 18 holes, and at any given point there could be balls in the air on every one of those holes multiple times. So it's not an easy sport to cover. I think there have been some great improvements made. I'm sure there are viewers out there that think that there ought to be a better way to cover it, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the years to come that things improve even more.
Talking about not an easy sport to cover, tell us about the behind-the-scene team for an NBC golf telecast.
Well, I often liken it, Jack, to a traveling circus. If you think about it, a normal PGA Tour event for us, we have about 120 people working. And that goes from spotters and scorers to audio people to camera people to production people to announcers. It's a concerted effort by a lot of people. I know when you sit at home on Sunday afternoon, hit the clicker, and it magically comes on, you listen to myself and Roger Maltby and Johnny Miller and Nota Begay and Dan Hicks, but there really are a lot of moving parts, and everybody has to do their job and do it correctly for it to all work. Now, at the Ryder Cup, which is coming up here soon, we'll have over 200 people working. And, again, everybody has to do their job, has to be done correctly for it all to magically appear on your TV screen. I say it's a traveling circus because, there are often weeks where we do a week and then we do in the very next week we're in another town, doing the same thing over again. And, typical week they lay 15 miles of cable. Towers are erected for cameras and announcers, and so a group moves on from one city to the next, gets the groundwork done, we come in, do the job, and they tear down and move on to the next week. So it's a concerted effort by a lot of people doing a great job.
We're talking to Gary Cook. When we come back, we'll ask him about his most famous call ever. We all know it. And I'm Jack Grisoul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Grisoul. Let's go back to 2001, Saturday, the third round of the 2001 Players Championship, that famous Island Green. You make a call that's legendary. What happened?
Well, it was an interesting scenario, Jack, to be honest with you. My tower's right there at 17, so I've been watching the action all day long. The whole location that day was down in the very front portion of the green. Greens were very fast, and I had been aware that virtually every player that hit the ball up on the upper level of the green had a really hard time, with their putt down the hill to the hole in the front portion of the green. In fact, several had putted it right off the green, against the fringe, and there have been some three putts, even some four putts from up there. So when Tiger hit his tee shot up onto that upper level of the green, you know, we generally go away to commercial because it takes them about a minute and a half or so, 2 minutes to walk from the 17th tee around to the 17th green. So when we went to commercial, I hit our producer, Tommy Roy, on the talk back and said, you know, if we have a chance, get back here in time for us to really set this putt up, because every player who's been up there on that upper level has had just a tremendously difficult time with the putt. So it worked out great. We came back from commercial. Tiger was still kind of looking at the putt, standing on the top of the ridge, and Johnny and I got into a little conversation about, you know, how difficult the putt was, what the tendency had been for those players who had putted from up on that upper level. So we were able to really give the viewer a great sense of anticipation. You know, was Tiger going to be able to do something different than what all the other players I had seen putt from that position do? Or was he going to kind of fall victim to the same same kind of results? Well, he gets over the ball, and there's a real nice hush. You know, we're kind of instructed, especially there at the players, when there's that murmur in the crowd, you know, that we try to lay out as much as possible, and we did. So Tiger hits the putt, and as it's cresting the hill, Johnny Miller says to me, "Gary, how's that look?" And I said,
"Johnny, that's better than most."
Well, it gets about halfway down the hill, and now I can tell that it is on a good line. So I come out with another better than most. And then, lo and behold, the ball catches the hole and goes in. And about that time, I almost jumped out of my tower with another
better than most
hair on the back of my neck was standing up, and then, of course, the crowd just erupted. And it was, you know, Tiger's reaction was typical of Tiger and one of those Tiger moments. And the great thing, if you go back and watch that broadcast, no one says a word for close to a minute. And we just let the moment play. We let the crowd reaction play, Tiger's reaction play, and it was, you know, it was just one of those special moments in sports that sometimes you just are fortunate to be a part of.
They're going to name that tower behind that 17th green after you, because you've worked in that tower since 1997, 4 days every year.
Yep, I have. You know, I've seen a lot of great stuff. I think I've been able to call holes in one. I've seen, you know, Bob Tway make a 12 with four balls in the water and a three putt, and I've kind of seen a little bit of everything there, Jack. And it's, you know, some players like the hole, some players despise it. I know the crowd loves it, and I think the viewers love it. And certainly, as someone calling the golf on that hole, it provides a lot of excitement.
The NBC crew, play-by-play Dan Hicks, analyst Johnny Miller, talk about those two gentlemen.
Just great to work with both. You know, they've been together so long now that they're just the ultimate team. They kind of know, you know, what the other's going to do before they do it, which always makes for great television. Dan is one of the most prepared people I've ever been around as far as doing his homework, constantly reading, making sure he's up to date on everything. And Johnny's Johnny. You know, some people love him. Some people don't care for his analysis and his comments. The nice thing to me about, to be perfectly honest with you, you never know what Johnny's going to say. And that makes for good television. And I think sometimes Johnny never knows what he's going to say. It just kind of comes out. As he says, sometimes my mouth works before my brain functions. So, but that's good. It makes for good television. I know sometimes the players are a little unhappy with some of the comments he makes, but I think if they go back and listen to the context in which they're made, again, having known Johnny as long as I have, he never intentionally tries to make somebody look bad or make him out to be a bad person. I mean, that's just not in his nature. And you know, he's just trying to do his job the best he can. And, you know, we're constantly reminded, even though we're all former players, that we're there to serve the viewers, not those that are competing in the tournament.
Speaking of never knowing what the person's going to say or do, talk to us about two other partners, Peter Jacobson and David Faraday.
Well, both are very, very funny individuals, which I admire quite a bit, because I've never been accused of being funny. So I often sit back and actually there have been times literally when it's come to my hole and I'm supposed to be talking and I'll have to hit the mute button because I'm laughing so hard at one of the things that either Peter or David has said. David is a very unique individual. I mean, he really is. He's a very good person, and his mind just works a little differently than others. Sometimes he's very quick, very and just a pleasure to be around. Peter is a multi-talented person. You know, he's very musically inclined. You know, when we've done the Phoenix Open a couple of times here in the last few years, when CBS has had the Super Bowl, he's written a song about the famous 16th hole there, and just done a great job with that. They're great additions to our team. They kind of round out our team. You know, every team, to me, each person on the team has a role, and they certainly serve those, being a little irreverent and on the humorous side.
Speaking of a little irreverent, if and when you play a round of golf today with Johnny Miller, Peter Jacobson, and David Ferretti, do they ever offer commentary on Gary Koch's game today? And if so, what would they say?
Well, when we play, I can promise you there's commentary being made on everybody's game by everybody else. I think it's just part of our nature, and I think they just, we're just so used to giving each other a hard time and having fun that no one is immune, that's for sure. Everybody's going to be in the hot seat at some point in time. I guess if they were commenting on my game, they would probably say, used to be a great putter, now probably just average.
So, later this week, the 41st Ryder Cup matches at Hazeltine National Golf Club in Minnesota. Tell us about what we're going to see.
Well, I think it's going to be a very interesting match. I think, again, on paper, as it has been for, a number of the previous matches, the U.S. team is favored and probably should be based on the world rankings of the members of the team. Europe comes in with six rookies out of their 12, which will be very interesting. It's always kind of fun to keep track of how the rookies react, especially when they're at an away game. It's one thing for a European rookie to start in the Ryder Cup, but when they're at home, but when they're on American soil, it makes it that much more difficult. So that'll be an interesting thing that I'm sure we'll be following, how the rookies for the Europeans handle the pressure of a Ryder Cup, pro U.S. team crowd, hopefully. I would assume that Minneapolis will come out and support the team. Many the Minnesotans are great sports fans, and they don't get to see a lot of golf. So I'm sure they'll be out in numbers, and I'm sure they'll be pulling hard for the U.S. team. So that'll be interesting to see. I hope. I'm not supposed to root, obviously. We're supposed to be impartial, which I think we do a very good job of when we actually cover the event, but having been born here in the United States and being an American citizen, you'd like to see the U.S. team finally win one. It's been a while, and their record of late has not been good. So, you'd like to see the U.S. team play to their potential. It just seems like in covering these matches over the last, close to 20 years now, the U.S. team has a hard time playing to their level of what they're capable of. Now, whether that's too much pressure, whether it's lack of team chemistry, lack of a captain doing his job properly. I mean, you can argue any number of different points through the years, but the bottom line is they just need to play the way they're capable of playing, and the U.S. team should do fine.
We're talking to Gary Koch. When we come back, we'll ask him what it's like playing for our country. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. We're talking to Gary Koch, the legendary NBC golf analyst. Gary, you've played representing our country. What's it like?
No greater feeling of honor and patriotism than to be announced as representing the United States of America, Jack. It's I think I had the opportunity to do it three different times as an amateur. I played on two Walker Cup teams and a World Amateur team. When they raise the flag and play the national anthem, the sense of pride that you have as an American is pretty much overwhelming. I know the very first time I was, must have been 19 years old, Walker Cup 1973 at the Country Club at Brookline and the opening ceremonies, there were tears rolling down my face. And I think you see it even to this day in the Ryder Cup matches, being on that first tee, they introduce the players, the level of emotion that these great players show is a great example of what it means to them. And it is very important. I think that's why you hear year after year guys saying, I want to make the Ryder Cup team. I want to make the President's Cup team. And I think it's as much about being a part of that team as it is about representing your country. And I think representing your country probably tops being a member of the team.
Let's talk about the two captains. For USA, Davis Love III. For Europe, Darren Clark. He may walk around with a bottle of beer or something. Talk a little bit about those two captains, please.
Yeah, good friends. They've played a lot of golf together, very similar in age, so they know each other very well. I think Darren perhaps a little more fun-loving, a little more laid back from that standpoint. I don't know whether that'll translate into his team and their level of comfort. I wouldn't be surprised if it will. Just a great guy to be around. Very honest, very open, and I'm sure he's done his homework. And he had some difficult decisions to make with his captain's picks. A little controversial perhaps in picking Thomas Peters, a rookie, when he already had five rookies on the team. But he's a man of conviction, and I'm sure he knows and thinks he's done what's best for his team. Davis, another true gentleman, ultimate professional, always has been. His dad, longtime PGA of America professional. So he was raised in the game and knows all the traditions and the honor that goes with it. He'll conduct himself in a wonderful way. There's no question about that. It'll be interesting, with this formation of the new task force that the PGA of America has put together. It sounds as though, there'll be a lot of input coming from his vice captains, Jim Furyk, Steve Stricker, Tom Lehman, and Tiger Woods. How much input and how Davis uses that input will be very interesting. I like the idea that they're starting to name vice captains that will be captains at some point in time of U.S. Ryder Cup teams. That makes an awful lot of sense to me, that you get them involved and keep them involved in the process. So I think, maybe a little bit different style between Darren and Davis, but I'm sure both will have their teams ready to play.
Most people would say the greatest golfer of all time was Jack Nicklaus. We met at the Cornerstone event, the Turning Point, and we honored him that Sunday and Monday. Talk to us about Jack Nicklaus.
Because of when I played the game on the PGA Tour, I would have to say that he is the greatest that's ever played. Now, I will say that I think Tiger Woods probably played the game better than anyone has ever played it for a period of time. But when you look at Jack's longevity, winning major championships 24 years apart, that says an awful lot to me about the man and his talent and his ability to perform under great pressure and to win major championships. But the great thing about Jack to me was not only how well he played, it was how he conducted himself. I mean, you go back and look at events where Jack had a disappointing loss, might have been in the final group or near the final group of a major championship, and somebody just performed better. He was always gracious. He was just the consummate sportsman and sportsmanship. And I think those of us that grew up in that generation and watched Jack learned an awful lot from that, that how you were supposed to conduct yourself as a professional golfer and as a sportsman. And I'll take as much away from that, how he conducted himself, how he handled himself, and what kind of family man he was, as much or more so than how great a golfer he was.
A lot of people know that he won 18 majors. Not many know that he was runner-up at 19 major events. So Tiger's recently announced he's going to come back. What do you think will happen?
Well, it'll be a media circus. I can promise you that. If he ends up playing at the event out in Napa at the Safeway Open, I'm sure they'll have more media coverage than they ever imagined. They'll have more spectator interest than they probably ever will have imagined. I caution everyone in that, hopefully they'll give Tiger a break if he doesn't perform as well as maybe we all want him to or expect him to. Being away from competition as long as he has, going through all that he has with his physical ailments, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it takes him a while to get back into what I would call a competitive mode. You can practice all you want. You can hit all the balls you want. You can play all the golf you want at home. But when you go out to a PGA Tour event, stand on the first tee, and they announce your name, it's just different. It really is. It's just a different – you think differently. You feel differently. And, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it takes him a little while to kind of get back into that competitive mode.
As our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners, Gary Koch?
Well, play the game to enjoy it. You can get better by working hard at it, but at the same time, you need to enjoy what you're doing. I would tell all our young listeners that if you have the opportunity to play with players who are better than you are, do it whenever you possibly can, because there's no better way to learn how to improve than by watching those who have already done what you need to do. And there's no sense reinventing the wheel. Just kind of figure out what better players do and then try to make sure that your game improves in those areas as well.
Gary Koch, you're truly better than most as a golfer, a commentator, and most importantly, as a man. Keep it up.
Thank you very much, Jack. It's been a pleasure.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.